This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Well, Mr. Barr, William Barr, Bill Barr, is testifying, and not at this moment. It'll resume in about a half hour. And we've set things up here to be able to carry parts of the testimony live. So should things get interesting, we'll simply go to the hearing. But the word is coming from all over. You know, Bill Barr, William Barr, is the guy who shut down Congress's and the Justice Department and the special prosecutors' investigations into whether George Herbert Walker Bush had committed crimes as vice president or even as a candidate with Ronald Reagan in 1980 when they were running for president and vice president together, whether he had committed crimes with regard to the whole Iran-Contra affair of Iran holding the hostages longer and in exchange for that, the Reagan administration selling them weaponry. And, you know, and then using that money to ship weapons down to Costa Rica, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and then, you know, take the money from those or take payments for those weapons in drugs and bring those drugs into the United States. I mean, there's this whole sordid mess. And it looked like George Herbert Walker Bush might be actually looking at going to jail if he had a play, you know, he played a role. And certainly Caspar Weinberger and five other people in the administration were looking at jail time. And it was William Barr who said, no, we're going to pull a plug on that one. And advised President Bush, the elder, to pardon all six of them by way of shutting down the investigation. That's the guy that Donald Trump now wants to be his attorney general. That's the guy who was speaking earlier and will be again speaking before Congress. I mean, you know, very straightforward stuff. Heidi Hess, the director of co-director of Credo Action, says William Barr is Brett Kavanaugh all over again, a bigoted nominee handpicked to give Donald Trump a pass when it comes to the Russian investigation. And in fact, you know, really important point. Now, I just caught a few things here from his testimony this morning. If you caught anything else, give us a shout and let us know. But the main thing that I caught was that prior to Barr, pretty much, as I recall, all of the nominees who were, you know, considered for this position going, you know, way, way back. I mean, you know, I'm not the one who did the research on this. I've seen it cited in several different sites. Basically, everyone who sat there in that chair and was questioned about whether they would take the advice of the Office of Government Ethics, when they say, I mean, there's this actual branch inside the executive branch whose job is to tell people who work for the president when they can do something and when they can't under the law. And the Office on Ethics advised Jeff Sessions, you have to recuse yourself. And he did. And it wasn't just Jeff Sessions. Every person from Jeff Sessions going back, you know, 20, 30 years, who has been sitting in the Senate applying for the job of Attorney General, when asked, will you recuse yourself from something if the Office of Ethics says you should, has said yes. Barr this morning did not say yes. He said he would seriously consider what they have to say, but he would make the decision himself. In other words, yeah, I might be conflicted. I might have written a 19-page memo talking to Donald Trump, you know, that was distributed to Jared Kushner's lawyers and Ivanka Trump's lawyers and Mike Pence's lawyers and Donald Trump's lawyers saying, you know, yeah, the whole Mueller thing is poorly conceived and it's a problem. I might have done all that, but so what? I'm still going to make decisions about this investigation. And it's not just this investigation. This guy is a hardcore right winger and has been since he was AG under George Herbert Walker Bush. In addition to masterminding the cover up for George Herbert Walker Bush that saved the Republican presidency and saved the reputation of Ronald Reagan. Very few people now today know that Ronald Reagan committed treason to become president and that George Herbert Walker Bush was probably in on it. We never really knew for sure because William Barr stopped the investigation. Literally, as soon as the special prosecutor, Lawrence Walsh, started asking for George Herbert Walker Bush's diaries, boom, Barr comes in and says, okay, that's it. It's all over now. We're going to pardon these six people. You got nothing to investigate. You're out of business. And that was brought up this morning, but, you know, in kind of a, you know, I mean, you've got to, in kind of a mealy-mouthed way, I mean, you've got to, and frankly, the people who, you know, the Democrats who might be running for president, Amy Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, I believe Cory Booker's on the committee, the three of them, on this Judiciary Committee, none of them, to the best of my knowledge, have yet asked a question. So, you know, keep an eye, particularly on Kamala Harris, former prosecutor. She is a hardball questioner. And she may well lay this out the way I just did, but, you know, I'm not holding my breath. But then, you know, the other issue, we, you know, this morning he tried to say, well, you know, back in 92, we had the highest crime rate in the history of the United States. Well, you know, it was fairly high, but it wasn't, you know, like after the Civil War or something. But, you know, yeah, we had a high crime rate. And he says, you know, so we had to have these minimum maximum sentences and lots, you know, heavy enforcement and stuff like that. Right. This is Vanita Gupta, the Leadership Council on Civil and Human Rights writes, as Attorney General Barr, and this is back under George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush the Elder. As Attorney General Bush, Barr demonstrated a draconian approach to law enforcement that helped build the system of mass incarceration we have today, which continues to decimate poor black and brown communities. This is a piece he published in CAFE on Monday. He said, yet he denied evidence of racial disparities, telling a reporter, our system is fair and does not treat people differently. It was untrue then. It is still untrue now. In fact, he goes on to point out, Barr later backed a 1992 Justice Department report, the case for more incarceration, as the prison population in the United States soared. The report irresponsibly stated, we are incarcerating too few criminals and the public is suffering as a result. He also co-chaired a commission in the mid-1990s that recommended abolishing parole. As Vanita Gupta says, we don't need Jeff Sessions 2.0. Kristen Clark, the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights. Barr's nomination comes following a period that has proven to be devastating when it comes to civil rights enforcement in our country. At every turn, his past actions, excuse me, at every turn, this Justice Department has abandoned enforcement of civil rights laws and reversed course in pending cases. It's really pretty breathtaking what this, who this guy is and what he's all about. There are also some interesting questions that all of this raises. By the way, I mentioned Barr's perspective on race. Everything's good. You know, white supremacy. Just everything's good. Today would have been Martin Luther King's 90th birthday. He was born on this day in 29, excuse me. Same year my mother was born, as I recall. So he would have been 90 today, as would my mother have been. Anyhow, he said, King said, nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. And he said, he who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetuate it. He accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. Amen. Now, meanwhile, another one of the stories out there, and I think this one is particularly startling, is that Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo, the two Mikes, are members of a doomsday cult. I mean, literally, there's no other way to say it than that. They believe that God is going to destroy most humans on the earth, that 144,000 Jews will survive in Israel. They will then convert to Christianity, and then Jesus will return. And, you know, a third of the earth will be destroyed by fire, and a third by, you know, blah, 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 blah. And what this philosophy essentially says to people, this doomsday apocalyptic cult philosophy that Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo have both, on the record, spoken out numerous times in support of. What this says is that global warming doesn't matter. The world's going to end anyway, and Jesus is going to make it all new. By the way, that's a quote from James Watt, not specific to global warming, but James Watt was Reagan's Secretary of the Interior. And when he was confronted with a reporter about why are you selling off federal lands for pennies on the dollar for oil exploration and uranium exploration when it's ruining these public parks, and James Watt said, well, Jesus is going to come again and make all things new, so it won't matter. So, I mean, this has been part of this apocalyptic thinking has been used by the Republican Party literally since the 1980s to say it doesn't matter what we do. You don't need the EPA to protect the environment. It's all going to get cleaned away by the end of the world. You don't need the Interior Department to protect the parks. You know, let the rich people loot them for all they can. Steal all the property they want, because it's all going to be rebooted. It's all going to be made new again when Jesus returns. This philosophy or this theology, this religion, this idea, this apocalyptic idea that the world is going to end and it's a good thing has justified playing chicken with nuclear war, playing chicken with the global warming. Just this whole spectrum of areas where the Republican Party has said, we don't have any responsibility for this. Or if we do, we don't care because the world is gonna start over again. This is dangerous stuff. I mean, Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo, they don't just give lip service to this stuff. Most Republican politicians just give lip service to it because they want to get the evangelical vote. Pompeo and Pence go out of their way to talk about the rapture, to talk about the end of days, to talk about, you know, Jesus is real. I mean, Mike Pompeo gave a speech the other day where he said, you know, any day now, the end of the world is coming. Well, what does that mean? What does that look like? Does that look like war with Iran, China, Russia? I mean, how much nuclear war do you want, right? So some really, really, frankly, startling issues. And, you know, William Barr, he's going to bluff his way through this the same way that Kavanaugh did, in my humble opinion. He's a very smart man, and he's not going to say anything stupid. And the Republicans are going to cut him all the slack he can, all the slack they can. Your thoughts on these and the other news of the day, give us a shout. We'll be right back. 202-808-9925.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, the place where despair is not an option. And welcome back, Omar in Herndon, Virginia. Hey, Omar, what's on your mind today?
Tom, thank you so much for taking my call. Just real quick before I get to my topic, I remember you once mentioning that either Peter or Paul cut off one of the Roman soldiers' ear and Jesus attended to the Roman soldier.
Yeah, Peter cut it off and Jesus healed it back up.
Okay, so the point I'm trying to get to that these evangelicals, you know, I mean, if they believe in Jesus, Jesus is a very comforting person. He adheres to the people who are in pain or hurt. So I don't understand why he's supporting Donald Trump, who basically doing the opposite of what Jesus did.
Yeah.
You know, it's just I don't understand.
They don't believe in Jesus, Omar. They believe in the God of the Old Testament and a vengeance and wrath-filled God. There are little flickers of that through the New Testament that most biblical scholars believe were added long after Jesus was dead, but those are the flickers. I mean, you know, it's just they're not really Christians.
Yeah, yeah. And the only thing I wanted to talk about, if this new attorney general become a Trump, another puppet, you know, what I think would be good for us is that the power of the ballot of the box, because you would have a legitimate look, and it also be very powerful, and it's going to damage the Republican in the long term. You know, my expectation right now for the Democrat is to focus on kitchen table issues, you know, so we can, like I said before, plant the seed for 2020. Because if we let Trump try to run in 2020, the power of the ballot box is going to be powerful and it's going to do a grave damage to the Republican Party. So yeah. I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Thank you.
You know, I think you're right. And it causes me to raise another question, which I'll repeat after the break is over. And that is, you know, Mitch McConnell right now is willing to ride this Trump shutdown train as long as is necessary. Mitch McConnell could end the shutdown literally in 10 minutes. Well, maybe it takes 30, but you know, he could end it within an hour. Yeah, all he'd have to do is call a vote. Let's have a vote on the legislation that we passed in the Senate on December 19th. It needs to be revoted because we've got a new Senate. You know, it's a whole new Congress. Every 2 years, it reboots. And so all the legislation that didn't get passed last time has to be brought forward all over again for a vote. But let's have a vote on that piece of legislation that the Senate passed back in December. The House just passed it, intact, not a word changed. So all the Senate has to do is hold a vote on it. And Mitch McTurtle is refusing to do that. So why? This is the question. Why? What is McConnell afraid of? He clearly doesn't want to challenge Trump. But is it that he's afraid of Trump? Is it that he's afraid that the Chinese interests that have apparently gotten to him through his wife's business might come out? Is it that his complicity in Russian and other foreign involvement in our elections? Mitch McConnell took several million dollars from a Russian oligarch affiliated fellow during the campaign. Is it that that's going to come out? I mean, what is it that, you know, what personal interest of Mitch McConnell's is he hiding, is he burying by protecting Donald Trump in this shutdown? I don't know the answer to the question, but I'm more than happy to entertain your speculation. I'll tell you mine. I think it's possible it's China. I think it's possible it's Russia. I think it's possible that Mitch McConnell is. It's even possible that Mitch McConnell is terrified of Trump. Although it's hard to figure because McConnell is arguably the most powerful person in the country. We'll be back. So here we have this doomsday cult that has embedded itself within the Republican Party. Jeff Charlotte wrote the book, The Family. It's all about this group of Republican legislators who live in this house on C Street in Washington, D.C., that's owned by this nonprofit, this church. And because it's a church, they don't pay taxes. And because they don't pay taxes and the church owns the property, they give, basically rent to Republican members of Congress. Super, super cheap. All you have to do is just play along with, we're going to pray three or four times a day and all this kind of stuff. Some of the most bizarre of the Republican malefactors have gone through that machine. And then you've got Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, John McCarter writing over the Daily Kos. Who sold their soul to whom? Now, I think this is a really important question. Mitch McConnell is keeping the government shut down. He could end the government shutdown literally in an hour or less, simply by saying, I'm calling a vote on the floor of the Senate right now on the legislation that we passed back on December 19th that gives Donald Trump $1.6 trillion for his border wall and that restarts the government. We passed it back in December, December 19th, and Donald Trump said he was going to sign it until the next day. Sean Hannity told him no. But, he said he was going to sign it, and it passed through the House last week without a single word change. So all we have to do is drop it before the floor of the Senate, and we've got it all over again. It's right here. It's easy to do. So, why is McConnell not reopening the government? Is it that he's afraid of Donald Trump? If so, what's he afraid Trump can do? Is it that he's afraid of the Chinese business interests and political interests that have made him a multimillionaire through his wife's companies, his wife's family's company? Is it that he's afraid of it coming out that he took millions of dollars, that appears to have started out in Russia for his Republican senatorial campaign, at least $3.5 million that we know of, that, was then passed along to other senators? This is how Mitch McConnell holds his place in the Senate, by being the dispenser of millions of dollars that he gets from Republican oligarchs, the Shelley Adelsons of the world, but also apparently from Russian oligarchs. So what is Mitch McConnell hiding? What is he afraid of? What is it that's driving him to behave in a way that is shattering the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans? And it's not just the American employees, the federal government workers who are not getting paychecks. It's the guy who runs the diner or the deli, down the street, that's shut down because the government shut down. It's the family that runs the gift shop down at the corner of E Street and 11th, down by the Ford Theater where there's nothing going on because the government's shut down. The list goes on and on, and it's not just there. I mean, there are places all over the country where there are heavy concentrations of government employees, and these entire communities are being hurt. You're going to see this show up in the first quarter jobs numbers, in all probability, if this thing goes on for another week or two. So why would McConnell do this? Why would he inflict this kind of pain on people? He's got to be afraid of somebody or something. Is it Trump? And why would Barr refuse to say that he would recuse himself from stepping into the Mueller investigation if the Office of Professional Ethics, of Governmental Ethics, says that he should? Why would he be the very first nominee for Attorney General ever to say, I might ignore them? What the hell's really going on here?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Your calls and theories right after the break. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Somebody tweeted, let me see who it was. Oh, Edward Canned, or Canade, C-A-N-A-D-E, tweeted me, what is Mitch McConnell afraid of? Why won't you reopen the government by simply introducing a spending bill that's already passed the Senate? And it's a link to an article in The Intercept. And this is one other possible explanation for McConnell's behavior that I hadn't frankly considered, but it makes a lot of sense. And that is that McConnell's up for re-election in 2 years in Kentucky. And in Kentucky, Donald Trump has 55% approval rating. McConnell is just 38%. So McConnell needs to hitch himself to Donald Trump's star if he wants to get reelected in 2020, or at least that's the math that he's doing right now. We'll see. We'll see where this goes. Steve in La Habra, California. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to share with you some thoughts on why I thought the not just Mitch McConnell, but also the entire Republican Party over the past couple of years has essentially played ball with Trump. And one of the things that brings this to mind was how rapidly and how quickly the other Never Trumpers immediately got in line. It took only about a week for the Never Trumpers to align themselves with Trump.
Right.
And I think we often forget that back when the DNC was hacked, the RNC was also hacked. But those documents were never released. And it would be interesting to know what maybe Russia is holding, the Russian hackers are holding. Hmm. And that might be interesting to know what might be responsible for helping these Republicans find their path behind Trump and to get into line.
That's interesting. So you think that they're being blackmailed? Or they're afraid of blackmail.
Yeah, I mean, in a word, yeah, something along those lines, yeah. And I would also say that just recently, I think in December, it came out that the RNCC was also hacked for several months with email monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, we don't know what documents they may have, but it would certainly sound... I can't think of any other more reasonable explanation for why... Never Trumpers. I mean, these aren't just people who had no particular opinion about Trump or thought he was just nuts. These are people who, again, they were Never Trumpers, and they immediately got into line right behind him. And yeah. I can't think of anything that would compel them to do that more than knowing that their stuff could get released too.
It's possible.
It certainly got Hillary Clinton in a bit of trouble, and John Podesta, and.
Yeah.
And certainly inflamed relationships between Hillary supporters and Bernie supporters. You know, when Bernie supporters felt that, with the it came out that that there was a kind of built-in slant or corruption that essentially attempted to scuttle the Bernie campaign in some sense. So I think that these things can't be ignored. I think that these are definitely elements that play into this.
Yeah. Yeah, a good point. Good points all, Steve. I would add one other thing, too, and that is the possibility that the Koch brothers and the other libertarian billionaires, the Peter Thiels and the Robert Mercers of the world, that who fund the Republican Party and who funded Trump's rise to the White House, not all of them, but, you know, certainly Mercer, that those guys think that this is a great experiment, shutting down the government. If we can shut down the government for a whole month, we're three quarters of the way there. If we can shut it down for a whole month, 1/12 of a year, and the sky hasn't fallen in, it's just been an inconvenience, then that's proof that we don't need to be charging these high tax rates against Koch Industries and David Koch and Charles Koch. Instead, we could cut their taxes and we could cut the size of government. This is the whole libertarian thing, that government is evil. You know, this started with Ronald Reagan in his inaugural address. Right, January 20th, 1981, government is not the solution to your problems. Government itself is the problem, said Ronald Reagan. It was a lie then, it's a lie now. But, you know, the libertarians embrace this. This is core to their thinking. Mike in Manhattan, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike.
I was calling because I wanted to add to the doomsday cult situation.
Sure.
It seems like the religious also attach themselves to. I've had a lot of conversations where they say, well, God will handle it, you know.
Yeah.
Saying, what's going on here? And look at this guy. Well, God will handle it. Even if he doesn't do it here, he'll go to hell afterwards or whatever. And it just sounds like insanity.
So, yeah, and that was my point, is that what it does is it gives them a pass. You know, you don't have to worry about global warming. God's going to fix that. You don't have to worry about, you know, the chemicals in your cereal or in your food that cause cancer, because God's going to handle that. You don't have to worry. You know, it's an extreme variation on the, you know, place your life in the hands of God kind of thing. And it's also a philosophy that basically tells people not only that they're powerless, but that they should embrace their powerlessness. And therefore, you know, some Bronze Age sky god is going to take care of everything for you. And
yeah,
you know,
like do nothing and,
yeah,
you know, and just sit back.
Yeah,
and
just chill out. Don't worry, you know.
So don't worry about it.
So the billionaires are stealing all the money. It doesn't matter. Jesus is going to shake things up. Don't worry. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Julia in Auburn, Washington. Hey, Julia. You're on
the
air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So a couple of things. We all know that the only thing that will overcome the oligarchs is action and protest. And when are we going to have a protest in Washington, D.C. about losing our democracy?
Specifically, you're talking about the government shutdown. You're talking about, Trump trying to destroy the FBI.
Everything. Yeah. Our democracy is falling apart. Our economy is suffering with the shutdown. I mean, absolutely everything. When are people going to organize?
Yeah. Well,
I that's the only thing.
Yeah. If you're asking rhetorically, I don't have an answer. If you're asking literally, I think that people are organizing. Credo Action, you know, I quoted their leader this morning talking about how Barr is basically Kavanaugh 2.0. They've already got 100,000 signatures on a petition to Congress, to Democratic members of the United States Senate, saying don't vote for Barr. It's going to be real interesting to see, you know, where this goes, how these Democrats deal with him. And you know, how the vote goes, both out of committee and out of the Senate as a whole.
I know, but I mean, I call my representatives and my senators,
right,
and I sign all these petitions. But nothing, he gets away with everything. He gets away with Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
He gets away with not revealing his taxes. I mean, the litany goes on and on. And in the past, the only thing that will work is grassroots action and protest.
Yeah.
And we need to have a major, major, like Martin Luther King style protest.
Yeah. Well, I Indivisible is a great group. MoveOn.org. There are several groups that have enough breadth, who have enough millions of members, possibly Our Revolution, that they could orchestrate something like that. Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org. If that's your passion, Julia, I would suggest that you get inside all of those organizations and start agitating. I think we're past the point where any one of us alone can do it. We really need organizational help. But I'm guessing that probably all those groups are looking at what's the next step. Julia, thank you for the call. Keith in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I know why McConnell isn't doing it. Back in 2013 when we had the shutdown, Harry Reid gave Mitch McConnell $23 million to finish a dam project in Kentucky. And so McConnell opened up the government. And I remember that because back during the Freedom Caucus days, it was political sin to bring home the bacon. Now today,
oh, that's interesting.
We're finding out that the border wall will not be built in Kentucky. And frankly, I don't think there's anybody out there to buy McConnell off.
So you're saying that in 2013, the reason that McConnell collaborated or cooperated in ending the shutdown was because he basically took a $23 million bribe. He got something that made him look good in his district that would help him in his reelection.
Yep, he brought home the bacon.
Yeah, that would have been 2014. That's 6 years out from this one coming up. And so basically he's sitting there saying, okay, who's going to spiff me? Who's going to give me $20 million for a project in Kentucky?
Exactly.
Wow. That's pretty craven. I mean, you know, of course, you look up craven in the dictionary, and there's a picture of Mitch McConnell. Keith, well said. Thanks a lot for the call. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, your thoughts on William Barr?
Yeah, he's in a show for a Trump organization. He says a lot of stuff, but that doesn't mean he's going to go through with it.
Well,
you can tell in his voice. You know, he's not thrilled to death about everything that's going on, so he's going to change it.
Well, I recall one question where he said, to the best of my recollection, you know, whenever a lawyer says that, you know that either they're creating wiggle room for themselves or they're just outright lying. And then, of course, the whole ethics thing, you know, would you recuse yourself if the Office of Government Ethics were to say that you absolutely should? And he said, well, you know, I'll do whatever I want to do, basically. I mean, those are the words that he said, but that's essentially what he said. So, yeah, spot on. You know, we will see where all this goes. Corky, thanks a lot for the call. Jim in Sunland, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Jim, what's up? Jim? Oh, Jim is not listening to his phone. Joe in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Joe, you're on. Oops, Joe just must have pushed the answer button. He just went away. Michael in Snohomish, Washington. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you were just talking about how the Koch brothers think that after 30 days and no government blow-up, they can continue with the shutdown because it's okay to kill the government.
Right.
But they seem to forget that all the federal workers who are working with no pay, that's why the government's not blowing up. If all the Coast Guard workers, none of them went out to sea and none of the TSA agents were working,
right,
the government would sure blow up.
Yeah, and the TSA, you know, I've been saying this for a week now. I think that they are the weakest link in the chain, essentially, that Trump has. And the starting pay for TSA officers is $23,000 a year. The top end pay for TSA supervisors, the most that you can make in the TSA, is apparently, according to a report I read yesterday, $43,000 a year. So you've got people who are not, you know, these are not the $70,000, $80,000 paychecks that a lawyer can bring down working for the government. These are the basically blue collar paychecks. And
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, these people, they don't have a lot of money in the bank to fall back on.
Yeah, my point.
They should be like work to rules. Have a union slowdown, work to rules, see how that helps.
Yeah. Well, and I think that might be what's going on. I mean, I find it just absolutely fascinating that the TSA is now reporting very, very long lines. People are starting to miss their flights. A big happening to that effect down in Atlanta. Miami has shut down a terminal now for 2 days in a row, one of the terminals, for lack of TSA people. The TSA is reporting that between 6 and 7% are calling in sick, whereas typically it's around 3%. So we'll see where this goes, Michael. I think this is where it's going to bite him.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
They can't do the screening process that needs to be done, and there was another story about a gun that went through yesterday. Then people start taking it seriously. And Barr is continuing, by the way, to sing the whole Trump tune. In his testimony before Congress, he just said that we need to have a barrier at the southern border. We need stronger immigration laws. The immigration laws need to be fixed. This guy, you know, he's got a friendly face. This guy is a hardcore right-winger. He's a law and order guy. That's why George Herbert Walker Bush, the former director of the CIA, put him in charge of the Justice Department back in the day, in 92 and 93. He's the guy who orchestrated and engineered the cover-up of Ronald Reagan and George Bush's involvement in Iran-Contra in this traitorous, treasonous plan to flip the 1980 election, to keep the hostages in Iran, to humiliate Jimmy Carter so that Reagan would become elected. And then literally the minute when Ronald, on January 20th, 1981, when Ronald Reagan put his hand on that Bible to take the oath of office, the moment that he put his hand on the Bible in Iran, in Tehran, they opened the front door of that embassy and let those people out, or wherever they were keeping them at that point in time. They opened the door and let out the hostages. To the second. This was the Iranians' way of saying, okay, Reagan, we kept our end of the deal. We made you president, right? We held these hostages for 440 days. We totally humiliated Jimmy Carter. We ended his presidency. We put you, Ronald Reagan, and George Herbert Walker Bush, we put you into the White House and into the vice president's office. And now we expect something in exchange for that. We've got an entire military here in Iran that was built by the Shah of Iran after the 54, as I recall, Mossadegh got kicked out. The democratically elected president of Iran, literally, small d democracy. He was starting to talk about nationalizing Iran's oil, taking it away from the big oil companies. And so immediately the CIA went in and took this guy down and replaced him with the Shah, and the Shah sold the oil all through American oil companies. Right. And the Shah also took all that money from that oil and used it to buy weapon systems that were manufactured in the United States. So the Shah had an army with guns made in America. He had missiles made in America. He had tanks made in America. He had an air force with jets made in America. He had a navy with boats made in America, submarines made in America. Everything was made in the United States. And so when the mullahs took over during the Iranian Revolution, when the Shah got cancer and Jimmy Carter brought him to the United States for cancer therapy, the mullahs rose up and said, okay, that's it, he's out of here and we're in charge now. And the problem that they had was that they were on the verge of fighting a war with Saddam Hussein, and they didn't have spare parts for their military. They didn't have enough ordnance for their military. They needed, missiles for their missile launchers. They needed, they needed tires for their airplanes and their trucks. They needed half tracks for their jeeps. They needed stuff, and they couldn't get it. And the Reagan campaign, Bill Casey, who ran the Reagan campaign, came along and said, "Don't worry, when I'm director of the CIA, I'll see to it that you get this stuff." And he did. Bill Casey became the director of the CIA after Reagan stole that election with the help of the Iranians. And the president of Iran is living in the United States talking about this right now, published a piece about it in the Christian Science Monitor. Khomeini and Reagan cut a deal. Well, William Barr, the guy who's testifying before Congress right now, is the guy who killed killed any ability of Congress or anybody else to investigate that deal. Welcome back. Right now, William Barr, the guy who engineered the cover-up of Iran-Contra, who kept Ronald Reagan's reputation intact and kept George Herbert Walker Bush from going to jail by telling George Herbert Walker Bush that he should pardon Caspar Weinberger and five other people from the Reagan administration for rigging together this thing with Khomeini, with the Iranians, that they would hold the hostages for over a year while Jimmy Carter was running for president, in a way that would humiliate Carter and make Reagan president, that they would do that in exchange for spare parts and weapons systems that of American origin for the military that they had just acquired from the Shah. The guy who organized that cover-up is the guy that Trump wants to be his next attorney general. Let that sink in for a minute. KC in Deerfield, Illinois. Hey, KC, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to respond about the end times thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an expert on the Bible. I've never read it, but I know you've read it a couple times.
Yeah.
I do believe there's things in the Bible that talk about people that predict end times, and it basically says they're lying. This is not end times. This is simply hard times, and the Republicans are unwilling to engage the power of the U.S. to properly deal with global warming, immigrants, or anything else.
Yeah.
The $2 trillion gift to the uber rich could have turbocharged an effort to educate the public and change the way we use fossil fuels. This was a this is just something that's typical of Trump. And again, I've worked hard my whole life. This is not the end times. This is just hard times that people like me have dealt with their whole life. And the fact that they're using this, you know, these rich dudes are using this as a an excuse not to help anybody because, well, Jesus is going to take care of it and God's going to take care of it.
Right.
And I'm a strong believer in Jesus, but I don't believe that, let's put it this way. Jesus could be one of these people that are marching from El Salvador to the United States.
Sure.
And when he gets to the gate and we tell him not to come in, that's kind of the judgment right there. And that's really all he wanted to say.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, I was a stranger and you didn't welcome me in. I mean, that, you know, bottom line, Casey, very well said. Thank you. Cindy in Downers Grove, Illinois. Hey, Cindy, thanks for listening to CPT. What's up?
Hi, Tom. It's actually Sandy.
Oh, Sandy. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You know, when you had mentioned Ronald Reagan's quote, government is a problem, every time I hear that, I feel that sting, because I remember a quote, and I think it was written by Molly Ivins, concerning Ann Richardson, and she was a teacher before she became the governor of Texas. Mm. And she would take those little young students to the White House, and she'd scream out to them, "Who owns this house?" And the children had to respond with, "We own it."
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wish that the Democrats would get on board and counter that, because it seems to me that so many people do truly believe that government is the problem, and they have forgotten, you
it's
know, that
like
we own it and we control it. We should be able to control it. That it's almost embedded now in our culture. Politicians are crooks, and government has too many regulations, and they forget to look at our responsibilities, you know.
Amen. Amen. And that whole point of view views government as some distant, remote thing. And that's a danger. That worldview, that perspective is a danger to democracy itself. Cindy, thank you. Very well said. Mike in Quilcene, Washington. Am I saying it right, Mike?
Ah, good morning.
Hey.
Yeah, Quilcene.
Okay. So what's up?
Let me pronounce that. Well, I wanted to, I was listening here, and I heard this, I believe, on your show, that the agenda, what we're trying to understand here is, I believe that Donald Trump is trying to bankrupt America so that he can look back to his oligarch corporate friends and then, hey, you need to bail us out. Now, all of a sudden, the United States is privatized.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this. Judah Wodinski laid this out in 1976, the strategy of when Republicans are in office, run up the debt as much as you possibly can. When Democrats come into office, scream about the debt and force the Democrats to cut spending. And if you can create a crisis where the government literally can't pay the bills, that's the very best thing of all, because then everybody will agree, well, yeah, I guess we've got to cut Social Security.
Yeah, and if you look at the people he's hiring and this and that, that's their full goal, is to gut us out, take us out.
Yeah, and Ryan Zinke, Scott Pruitt, now it's Walker, this guy Walker, who's a lobbyist who's going to take, I mean, basically lobbyists at Interior, lobbyists at EPA, lobbyists at regulatory agencies all across the government.
Yep.
This is what Trump has been doing. Spot on, Mike. I totally agree. And, you know, much to the detriment of America. And, you know, whether he's doing it on behalf of the oligarch class, whether he's doing it on behalf of some bizarre libertarian ideology, the libertarians, of course, were invented in the 1950s in the 1940s, 1946, by a group of Republicans, or whether he's doing it to benefit Russia. It doesn't matter, really. It's terrible.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.